This is a Thanksgiving Day special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and we begin this program with a story. Jackie Miller joins us from her home in Tarrytown, New York, and thanks very much for taking time out of your holiday.
My pleasure.
And a couple of years ago, you stepped into a StoryCorps booth and told something extraordinary to your adopted son, Scott.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I said a couple of years ago when you went into the StoryCorps booth with your son, Scott, you told him an extraordinary story.
Oh, yes, Neil. It was just a family, a deep, 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 sort of dark family secret. And I just, Scott and I have a relationship that really doesn't abide secrets. Had to do with my having gotten pregnant when I was 17 years old, and that I gave up a child for adoption at that time. Of course, this was all news to Scott, and he, as you said, is adopted. And at that, as a result of that experience, I always knew that I would adopt a child when I was able to take care of a child. And that's where Scott comes in.
You've said it's a relationship that does not abide secrets, but why did you think he needed to know that at that particular moment?
I'm not sure how 2 years ago, Scott, you would have been around, I guess, 30-something. And it was such an intimate moment. We were in this booth, and it was as though time and the place just disappeared, and it was just Scott and I, and there was this very, very strong, intimate bond. And for me to have a secret like that, this was the time, if I were ever going to share that with him, that was the time. It just felt right. I didn't know I was going to do that until I did.
Well, joining us now from his home in San Francisco is Jackie's son, Scott Miller. Nice to have you with us, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. It's great to be here.
And what was your reaction when your mom told you that?
It was a big surprise. You know, as my mom, you know, has said, we don't have a lot of secrets. And this was a big one.
It's a big one, all right. Did you always know you were adopted?
Yes. You know, my parents let me know that I was adopted, you know, even before I could comprehend what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
I always grew up knowing I was adopted, so it was never even a question in my mind.
And when your mother says you have a relationship that does not abide secrets, well, you've talked to her throughout your life about what's been going on in your life?
Oh, everything. You know, it doesn't. I don't always talk about it in real time, of course, but, you know, because, you know, it's your mom. But
yeah, I can understand that.
But, you know, there really aren't a lot of things. There really are almost no things that at some point or in some form or another, you know, we haven't discussed.
And her telling you that story, did you suddenly understand something a little bit better about her?
You know, there are these moments that sometimes happens for people where just everything becomes crystal clear in a split second. And this moment, you know, when she told me that, I mean, you know, of course, once you kind of recover from it, it made sense of so many things.
Jackie, it made sense of so many things. And it must have, for one thing, clarified your relationship with your father.
Yes. I don't know that is the way I'd describe it. My dad was just such a hero to me. There are very few things. I don't know if there's anything he ever did that I thought was wrong. He was just a giant in so many ways. He's 5 feet tall, and he didn't know it. No one else knew that he was really short. But he was just such an influence in our town, in our lives. You just don't often meet men like that. So the decision that my father made when he found out that I was pregnant and gave me 24 hours to leave town, I didn't question whether that was harsh or it just seemed like if my dad has come to this conclusion, it's got to be right. And I think it was right. As difficult a time as it was for a 17-year-old with actually no place to go and pregnant, and he just let me know if you make choices like that, you just got to be prepared to deal with them.
With the consequences.
Yes.
Obviously, you dealt with them, and you've gone on to have a happy life.
More than happy. I probably have. I'm just, it's just been an absolutely amazing life. I've got an incredible son that just enriches life, enriches mine on a daily basis. Great friends, good health, financial security. It just doesn't get any better than this, Neil.
Well, it sounds like you have a lot to be thankful for today.
Yes, I do.
And Scott Miller, it sounds like among the things you have to be thankful for is, a wonderful mom and a great story.
Absolutely. And yeah, I was listening to my mom talk about it, and one of the things that struck me is, you know, about my grandpa. He was very short. And, you know, it's funny, growing up, I always saw him as a big personality, and so... And I was very lucky because I had, all of my grandparents through my childhood. And I realized, you know, as I got older, that's not always common. And so I've been really lucky, not only to have so many family people around me and to have that be such a big part of, you know, my growing up, but to have my mom, there to talk to and to confide in and to really know. There aren't that many people that you have and, that we have in our life that's, really just wants you to be happy. And so that's something that I'm very thankful for.
Scott Miller and Jackie Miller, thank you both for being with us today. And again, happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Neil. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Neil.
Over the past 7 years, the StoryCorps Project has gathered tens of thousands of stories like Jackie and Scott's, stories that reveal something about ourselves and the people we care about, who we are. What made us that way? In a moment, Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps, joins us. We want to hear your stories. When have you revealed something to a loved one so they would understand you better? A story that maybe helped you both resolve a conflict. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. You can also send your stories by email. The address is talk@npr.org. Dave Isay also established the National Day of Listening, which is tomorrow. He's the author of Listening is an Act of Love, a celebration of American life from the StoryCorps Project. And he joins us today from member station WBUR in Boston. Dave, welcome and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Neil. Great to talk to you again.
And how did you decide on the focus of this year's National Day of Listening?
Well, this year we're the theme of the National Day of Listening has to do with America's kind of growing divide, and I think coming out of the midterms and all the kind of screaming that's going on in the country now, it just seemed like an appropriate theme for the year. So here we are.
You don't think of the StoryCorps booth, and that's your other project, of a place where people go in to debate politics.
No, and I think what we're trying to do with the National Day of Listening this year, which is really an outgrowth of StoryCorps, what we're asking people to do is take an hour out tomorrow, the day after Thanksgiving, and interview a loved one. Take an hour and interview a loved one. Do what Jackie and Scott did, as kind of the least expensive and most meaningful gift we can give one another. And I think what we're thinking about with the national divide piece of this is just that, I think having these conversations like the one that Jackie and Scott did is an opportunity for people who may see things differently politically to talk about other things that might be even more important in their lives, who they are, who their family is, what they, how they want to be remembered and that sort of stuff. So I think that these StoryCorps style interviews are kind of something of a safe space for people to get to know each other beyond their political beliefs.
If we can get to the kind of intimacy that Jackie and Scott were talking about, we could see beyond some of those surface disagreements.
That's right. And it's all the nature of what's being talked about. So if one of the great kind of StoryCorps questions, Jackie, I think Jackie was talking about who's been the most important you know, person in her life. It sounds like her dad was certainly one of those people. Scott was another. And when you start talking about that, people can I think and I believe find places of common ground and, you know, recognize that if we spend a little less time shouting at each other and a little more time listening to each other, we'd be a better country.
Because often when we're talking the issues of the day, we're not really talking to each other. We're sort of talking at each other and saying things we've heard from other people. When you talk about the kind of intimate stories like that, there's nobody else who knows those stories. They're your stories.
That's right. And you know, StoryCorps is very much a project about listening. And, you know, we've recorded tens of thousands of stories across the country. And for the standard StoryCorps interview, there's a facilitator in the booth who's this person who spends a year or two serving a term of duty with StoryCorps and traveling the country and kind of bearing witness to these stories. And when you ask these facilitators, we've had hundreds at this point after 7 years of StoryCorps being in existence. When you ask them coming off the road what they've learned, I always get the same answer, which is that people are basically good. Again, I think StoryCorps is hopefully a project of hope to remind us that, that you know, really who we really are as Americans. And to me, you know, I hear people talk to me all the time about crying when they hear the StoryCorps stories on Friday, whether they're happy or sad. And most of them aren't sad, you know. But I think when you hear someone like Jackie talking, you know, it reminds us of the possibilities that life presents when it's lived to its fullest. One of the Jackie and Scott's interview, which you can find on the NPR website or on StoryCorps site, goes on to have Scott and Jackie talk about when Scott came out to Jackie a bunch of years ago. And it's just extraordinary to hear how she, you know, how she accepted him with open arms and just see how their relationship unfolds. It's really America at its best.
Dave Isay of StoryCorps is with us. More of your stories in a moment. When have you revealed something to a loved one so they would better understand you and maybe get past a conflict that was between you? Call us, 800-989-8255, or zap us an email, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's a Thanksgiving Day special from NPR News. This is a Thanksgiving Day special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. Thanksgiving brings good food, time with families. It also brings out stories. The annual Day of Listening is tomorrow, part of the StoryCorps project. It encourages us to all sit down with someone close to us and record a conversation. We're getting that conversation started a day early. Our stories tell other people who we are and why we got that way, help us understand each other better. When have you revealed something to a loved one so they would understand you and maybe get past a conflict you'd had with that person? Tell us your story. 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. Our guest is Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps and the founder of the National Day of Listening, also the author of the book Listening is an Act of Love, a celebration of American life from the StoryCorps Project. And Dave, well, we want to get some callers in on the line. Let's see if we can. I wanted to follow up, though. You were talking about the facilitators in the StoryCorps booth. They must learn an awful lot of when to shut up, too.
No, sure. I mean, I think these facilitators are really, you know, they're hired because they're amazing listeners and great human beings. And you know, their thing is really bearing witness, and it's mostly about being quiet. You know, I think that, you know, the title of the book that you just said, mm-hmm. said, The Listening is an Act of Love. I mean, I think listening is really what StoryCorps is all about. And, the idea of just – I think that part of what happens in these interviews is that listening to someone, you know, if you do one of these National Day of Listening interviews, you know, I think listening to someone – tells them that they matter and they won't be forgotten. And, you know, even just what you heard with Jackie and Scott, I mean, it can be a really profound moment in people's lives. One of the big surprises, StoryCorps has been kind of one surprise after another over the last, you know, 7 years. And I used to do radio documentaries for public radio and, you know, retired from that about a year into StoryCorps when I saw the potential, I think, that this thing has to make a difference in this country. But it's a profound experience, and I hear from people all the time that those 40 minutes they spent in the booth are among the most, you know, important 40 minutes they've spent in their lives. So something else that I hear all the time is whenever I give a speech, you know, I'm like mobbed with people who all say the same thing, which is, I wish I had interviewed my dad, I wish I had interviewed my brother, my mom, but I waited too long. So, you know, I guess my other message of the day, other than the national divide, kind of listening to each other thing, is not to wait. You know, do an interview tomorrow. Two things I promise. One is that you're going to learn things about whoever you interview that you never knew before, because the microphone gives you the license to have those conversations like Jackie and Scott did. And the other is that you're not going to regret it.
Interesting. The microphone gives you license because there is a sense of moment there,
yes.
A sense of recording, of permanence.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's the formality of the interview process, and there's something about it that's just, you know, I think kind of magical. And it allows you to have these conversations that you just don't have over the dinner table, and ask questions that you just don't get the chance to ask. You know, I was thinking about an interview I did with my mom a couple years ago. And, you know, I'm real close to my mom. I know her very well. And I thought that doing this interview with her was going to be, you know, a nice way to spend 40 minutes. But that's it. You know,
yeah.
And when I walked out of the booth 40 minutes later, the only thing that I knew coming out of the booth that I'd known going in, you know, was the date and what our names were. It was all new. and that's what happens in the structure of these interviews. We have a website, which is nationaldayoflistening.org, where we have a do-it-yourself instruction guide, and we have something called a question generator that has the 20, you know, most popular StoryCorps questions that you can, you know, check off and reorder and print out, and dozens of others. And these are the kind of, you know, again, the kind of questions that we just don't normally get the chance to talk about. But we should.
And I was just going to ask, though, you can quantify the StoryCorps project, the number of people who come into the booth and some of their experiences. How do you quantify the National Day of Listening?
We have National Day of Listening site, we have something called a wall of listening, where people can post information about who they've interviewed. And you can write who you've interviewed, what the date was, what you talked about. Someday, we're going to have our archive actually accept folks' interviews, so they can record interviews and send them into our archive as well. But that's still a couple years away. For now, though, all you need to do is document it. And, you know, technology is such where it's so easy to, you know, figure out how to upload something into your computer and burn CDs. And you know, you can preserve it for a long, 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 long time.
We are hoping to hear your stories today, stories from conflict. If you've had a conflict with a member of your family, a loved one, has there been a time when you told them a story that helped them understand you better, or you understand yourself a little better, maybe, and that help you get past that initial disagreement? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Our guest again is Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps and the National Day of Listening. Again, his book is Listening is an Act of Love, a Celebration of American Life, from the StoryCorps Project. And as you said, Dave, you've submitted yourself to your own process. You talked to your mom. Have you talked to other members of your family?
I have. I mean, the first StoryCorps interview, and I also have a question I'd love to ask on Thanksgiving to listeners,
sure.
Which is, you know, I'd be curious if, you know, part of, I think, what StoryCorps is all about is really honoring kind of the angels in our lives, the most important people in our lives. And I guess my question would be, if you could interview anyone in your lives, living or dead, who would it be, and you know, why? Yes, I have done.
But not George Washington, someone in your life.
Not George Washington, and no one famous, unless you're related to someone famous. I did the first StoryCorps interview, and that was an important moment. This was before StoryCorps actually started. We built a fake booth in a recording studio in Chinatown, and I brought in my great uncle Sandy, who was the last member of my grandparents' generation who was still alive at that point. And he was very different than his wife and his wife's sisters. My grandmother was this big character, and she had these crazy sisters. My Uncle Sandy's wife, Bertie, insisted she'd invented fruit salad. I mean, these are wacko people. And Sandy was a real dignified guy. The question was, here's a guy who's not a character. What's going to happen when you sit down and have this conversation with him? And we sat down. And Sandy told me the story of he told me a lot of stories. He told me the story of his first date with my great aunt Bertie. And he said that he was he told her to meet him on 14th Street, on a stoop on 14th Street. And he said He saw her coming at him for this first date, and he said she was dressed all in purple from head to toe. He said that she was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen in his life, and he panicked. He said, he thought to himself, what's she going to see in a dumb farm boy like me? And he turned and tried to get into the door at that stoop he was at, and the door was locked, and he started crying in this interview. And he said, I often thought that if that door had been unlocked, it would have destroyed my life, because that door being locked allowed me to be married to, you know, my Aunt Bertie for 50-some-odd years. So, and, you know, another thing about that interview was that Sandy, who was 89 at the time, he died last year at 95, that he took that CD of that interview, and he used to drive around Manhattan. He still drove at the time. And he would listen to it over and over and over again. And that was, you know, one of the early indications to me of the power of this, you know, very simple idea of StoryCorps.
Dave Isay, we want to hear your stories. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Let's turn to Charlie. Charlie with us from Phoenix.
Hi, guys. I come from Arizona, where it's pretty charged politically about the immigration issue.
Sure.
And in our family, there was a disagreement. My dad, who died this year, was very, very strongly opinionated against illegal immigration. And I'm very strongly opinionated that the Mexican people have rights and, you know, humanitarian and all of that. So one day I told him I was going to march in a parade against the bill, the 1070 bill, and he got furious. He said, well, tomorrow $1,000 of your inheritance is going in your name to support the cause with which you're opposed to. And he said, and if you march in the parade, it's going to be $10,000. I said, Dad, I don't care about the money. That's not the issue. And I need to go home because I'm too angry right now. You're too angry right now. The next morning, we got together, and we told each other stories. I told him about the story. I reminded him that my grandmother, you know, his mother came from Mexico illegally, that our family wouldn't have had a chance to be here in this beautiful country if it hadn't been for her coming here illegally. And then he told me a story that won my heart, too. And he said, you know, son, your sister's, my daughter, your my grandson, your sister's boy killed himself because of drugs. And he said, I think of illegal immigration as drugs. So when we actually started listening to each other and telling each other stories, we could see each other's point of view. He died this year, and I know that we were closer because of that huge conflict that we sat and listened to each other and told each other stories so that we could both understand.
And I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Charlie, but if there was somebody you could interview for this project, it sounds like it might be your dad.
It would be my dad. And I'm also a gay man, so I have a whole other story about, you know, telling my story and the love in which, you know, they accepted me. So, I mean, it's listening and telling stories is a beautiful way to communicate, and it goes to the heart rather than to the brain.
Dave, I say it's interesting in this case, the issue, the immigration issue that is particularly hot in places like Arizona, especially in Arizona. But going back generations, it could have been the disagreements with a dad who was a World War II veteran and a son growing up during Vietnam.
Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, I think that is a, you know, there's a story of hope if I've ever heard one. It made me think of StoryCorps starting a project over the next bunch of months with folks who are in hospice or palliative care and end of life project. And I met a fantastic doctor named Ira Bayak, who's a palliative care, one of the experts on palliative care. And he was talking a couple of weeks ago when I met him. He wrote a book about the four things that matter most, which is basically what he's – and this is, I think, something that's used in hospice fairly frequently. But having conversations with people who are dying and saying four things. One is forgive me. The second is I forgive you. The third is thank you. And the fourth is I love you.
Goodbye.
And goodbye. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think it's never too – when you love someone, it's never too soon to say, you know, I love you, or never premature to say thank you or to have these conversations.
It sounds, Charlie, as if you had some conversation like that with your dad.
I also am a hospice chaplain, and because of StoryCorps, years ago, I asked a friend who was a radio announcer to help me, and he engineered. He opened his radio studio, and I got to do an interview with my dad that we put on CD, and I can listen to any time. We spent an hour talking about, you know, the old ways and his life growing up and what mattered to him and meaning and what advice he would want to pass on to the next generations. And It was so, and my mom had just died when he did this, so his heart was very open, and he talked beautifully about life and what matters to him. And it was, you know, it was because of the beauty of StoryCorps and listening on NPR that, I was moved to do that.
Everybody's getting into the act, Dave.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Charlie. Yeah. No, it's great.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
And happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and those you love.
You're listening to a Thanksgiving Day special from NPR News. Again, our guest is Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps and the National Day of Listening. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Constance. Constance with us from San Francisco.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I discovered a big, huge family secret and the ramifications that it happened on our family. When I was about 20, I discovered a girl that looked exactly like me but with curly hair. And it turned out that she lived in Greece. I lived here. And we discovered that my father was a bigamist. And through that secret, everyone in my family except for me knew it. My mom and I never knew. The rest of the family did. And as a result, I've become a lot closer to my dad. You know, his behavior towards me and his behavior towards my sister were very different. She ended up hating him, and he now lives with her. And I'm another country away, and just discovering how everyone's behavior in my family was altered because of that deep, dark secret. And it's really incredible how, you know, everyone's chain reaction and what you think is, you know, love and openness and things like that turn out to be very secretive and very go against, you know, the goodness of the way you can grow up.
Well,
so I think it's really important to share stories.
Oh, everybody would agree with that. But have you asked the other members of your family, those who knew and did not tell you or your mom, why?
You know, it was just a shameful thing. They had confronted my dad early on when he made this decision to do that. And they just kept his secret as, you know, honoring him. And he did something he had to do at the time, you know, leaving that family and then coming here and needing to become a citizen. And, you know, they just kept that secret to protect the other family and to protect what they thought was good for me. And it turned out in the end that I finally did discover my brother and sister. I've known them now for 20 years, and we are closer than, you know, I was an only child. And now we're a lot closer, and we know each other. I know her kids, and we've all kind of grown up together despite the 20 years that we didn't have together. So it's been pretty powerful.
And have you had an in-depth conversation with your father?
You know, he's pretty secretive to this day, really stubborn. I've had the conversation and like, what were you thinking? Why did you do this? And he was just like, you know, I did what I did at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing against you, but he did what he did. And he hasn't really explained it. And he's a pretty proud, stubborn man. And, you know, he's lived with the consequences, unfortunately. He's been very distant with the both of us.
Well, perhaps the magic of the microphone, it might unravel some stories behind what happened at the time and why he felt he had to make those decisions.
Yeah, I think it's really important to be open and honest. And, you know, I've asked my aunts, you know, because they even used to visit that other family going back and forth between the United States and Greece. And, you know, they loved me and felt that it was more protecting than it was, you know, or than it should be painful. But now it's important to open up about all that stuff. And I think it's brought us a lot closer. And I've discovered a sister who has my toes, and it's just so heartwarming, you know, to get up close to her and realize, you know, there's so many similarities about us, and it's great to have a sister and brother that I never had.
Constance, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And here's an email from a listener who prefers to remain anonymous. I had not been in touch with my alcoholic sister for almost 20 years. After several years of working with others skilled in dealing with such problems, I began to contact her again. One of the stories I told her was the fact that my fiancé had died very suddenly. It changed our entire relationship, and her attitude toward me changed from constant and consistent resentment and acting out to compassion and a new sense of trust, friendship, ultimately love. She died 2 years later, and we had a very good and fulfilling relationship the last years of her life. I cared for her in her final days, and this story more than changed my family, but it has helped me to help others whose lives have been deeply affected by someone else's drinking problem. We're asking you to share your stories of, well, stories you've told to your families and loved ones that, well, maybe helped overcome a conflict. And also, as Dave Isay, our guest, suggests, is there someone in your past, in your family, more than any other person, if you had the chance, you'd like to talk to? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. It's a Thanksgiving Day special from NPR News. Tomorrow is StoryCorps' National Day of Listening, so we've invited Dave Isay, StoryCorps founder, to join us for this holiday to talk about stories and how they sometimes can help us resolve conflict. When have you revealed something to a loved one so they would better understand you, maybe help resolve a conflict? 800-989-8255 is our phone number. The email address, talk@npr.org. Let's go next to Judy. Judy with us from Milwaukee.
Hi. Okay, it starts when I was 17, my first boyfriend. We broke up in a very bad way. I was very hurtful to him. I never explained really why I was breaking up because I didn't understand it. And then I went on, really blocked that out. I almost didn't know that I'd ever dated this guy. When I was 44, after a lot of thinking about a lot of changes in my life, I remembered him. I found his letters. I remembered him. I understood the whole thing. I called him up. I found him on the internet, called him up. He told me he'd always been in love with me. He was never married. He'd never, no other woman was, you know, no other relationship had lived up to his memories of this. And he'd always blamed himself for screwing it up. So I told him this whole long story, very long story, about abuse in my family, how I'd been abused, how this high school teacher abused me while we were dating, how he had done some things that kind of tied into that. It wasn't really bad things, but the whole thing, I just had to get rid of him, and I got rid of him. And it was like the missing piece in both our lives.
Hmm.
And he, we talked for about a year and a half, and then he said, you know, I'm tired of thinking about the past. I just want to go live my life. And I think he's really, I think it's been a really liberating thing for him. And, well, of course, I was glad to, figure it out for myself too.
And to finally provide the explanation, you didn't even understand yourself at the time.
Oh, yes. And I always had felt so guilty about, somewhere in the back of my mind, I had so much guilt about, I knew that it had affected him so badly. I knew I had hurt him so badly. And so it was huge for me to get rid of that guilt and for him to understand. And now he doesn't blame himself. Now he understands. And I think he's going to be a different person. I hope.
Judy, that's a wonderful story. Hollywood scriptwriter would have worked on it differently, but nevertheless, it's come to an interesting conclusion, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, I think it's fascinating. And he's tremendously successful. He's a professor, and he's, traveled all over the world, but his personal life wasn't so good, so I'm hoping that gets better.
Dave Isay, I wonder, you hear these stories all the time, and yes, there are moments of magic, but moments of clarity and understanding, those are rare enough, too.
That is so true.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know, I think what we see with StoryCorps is mostly people who are kind of bringing people to the booth who have been very important in their lives to thank them. But I also think that, I think what Judy's talking about is having it goes back to what I was talking about what Dr. Byock was talking about, that opportunity to say I'm sorry to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of – the way that frees, kind of both parties in the matter and how liberating that is.
Judy, I hope you're having a wonderful Thanksgiving. And I think she's left, but we thank her for her phone call. Let's go next to Paul. Paul with us from Niles in Ohio.
Yes, my story is actually of me coming out to my sister. I grew up in a very small town in Ohio, and to me, being gay, had the fear that I placed on myself of bringing shame to my family. My family may not accept me. Well, my sister actually, and this was about 20 years ago, asked me to be the godfather of her daughter. And I deliberated about it for a while, and I actually said, before I say yes or no, I need to tell you something that's very important. And I told her I was gay. And she paused for a second, and she's like, yeah, so what else? And I'm like, well, that was it. And she's like, well, I've known that.
Hmm.
So to me, it was just something that was very important to me, one that she knows. but I thought it could potentially damage a relationship. And it was something that she's known all along and has accepted all along. And like I said, that was about 20 years ago. And just this last month, my partner and I actually got married, and we had about 40 friends and family from all over the country attend our wedding.
Including your sister?
Absolutely. Her and her daughter.
And her daughter, your goddaughter.
Yes, correct. She was actually in our wedding.
That's great. That's a wonderful story. Thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you.
And happy Thanksgiving. Let's see if we go next to, this is Heather. Heather's with us from Redland in Oregon.
Yes, thank you. I had tried to live my life with the lessons of a challenging childhood and raise my children with the lessons from that challenging childhood and not, you know, recreate the abuses. But there was contentiousness within the family and with my kids. And we had a major soap opera crisis in our immediate family. And I just felt during the unraveling and caring of that they needed to know what my history was to help understand my life, why I was the way I was, and why they experienced their dads and my relationship the way that they did. Because they saw me as more controlling and more dictatorial and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I sat down with each of my four children, the oldest first, and shared my life with them. And my oldest, I still remember, once her jaw dropped off the floor, she said, "You've got to tell her younger sister." And I said, "Yes, I will. But remember, this is my story to tell, not yours." And so my daughter calls me up the next day and says, "You know, my older sister told me I should call you and we should go out for lunch." So I took her. We were on a long drive. And I started sharing my story with her. And while we were in the car, she got a phone call and she said, "I can't talk now. I'm having the best time with my mom." And then her second comment was, "You have got to tell my boyfriend. You have got to tell my boyfriend, because sometimes I'll go home and say, I hate her." And when we were meeting up with my older daughter at the end of that car ride, and her first words to my daughter were, "Oh, Jordan, you were so right." And that completely transcended and completely transformed our relationship. I told my two, my sons were younger, and my youngest one, we're riding in the car, and we get home, and I'm not done with the story, and it's cold out. He undoes his seatbelt, and instead of getting out of the car, he turns his back to the door facing me like, "Keep going, Mom." So it has had a profound impact on our relationship. It has given me liberty to once a year say, "Is there anything I do or have said that has been hurtful to you?" So that they can tell me and I can make amends for it and then continue to work on our relationship.
That's an amazing story, Heather. And again, explaining who you were as a way of explaining to your children and their near and dear ones that this is why you are the way you are.
Mm-hmm. It answered so many questions, and my kids will tell you that our relationship shifted based on those talks.
And did it have to wait for a while until either you had gotten clearer on what had happened to you when you were younger or whether, in fact, some of those people had passed?
You know, that's a good question. Again, I've done a lot of personal work, and we were always taught to bring our lessons to the, you know, what have we learned? And so I tried to protect them from my fears or my past, the negativity of it. And so I was very upfront about alcoholism, very upfront about sexual abuse. I just hadn't shared my personal sexual abuse, but they knew about alcoholism in the family. But that was the piece that they did not understand. Their grandfather was different than the dad I had. I protected them to the best of my ability, but the timing was okay. It worked out well. Because, like I said, I was doing personal work through the bulk of their childhood, learning how to deal with the ramifications and changing how they experienced me.
And part of that work, I'm sure, was the understanding that the children who are abused grow up to abuse their children too often.
Exactly, and that was not what I wanted. You know, I took lots and lots of parenting classes because I knew the parenting that I got, although it was the best my parents knew how to do, it was not the best for me, and I needed to learn other tools. So I would say overall, I wouldn't trade my life away. I'd hate to have to go back and learn somebody else's wisdom because I've done a lot of hard work.
Heather, congratulations and happy Thanksgiving. I'm sure it's going to be a happier one than it might have been otherwise.
It is, and this Christmas we'll have four generations for the first time ever, and it'll be wonderful.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Dave, one thing we consistently learn from these stories, better late than never.
Absolutely. You know, it reminded me when Heather was talking, when we started StoryCorps, we asked a bunch of folks to come in and talk to the staff. And one of them was Art Spiegelman, who wrote the book Mouse, of course, about interviewing his dad about the Holocaust, who talked about how talking about one of the worst thing that's happened in the history of the world with his dad were the best conversations he'd ever had with his father. And the kind of irony of that. And it sounds like it was the same thing with Heather, that these conversations became important, as her daughter said, you know, I'm having the most important conversation of my life.
Yeah, it's interesting. And so many people, older people say, oh, you wouldn't understand. They're difficult to draw those stories out of. It is worth the effort.
It is. And actually, you know, when you take the time to sit down with someone and tell them that you want to do this interview, you'd be surprised that people love to be listened to. And there are some
otherwise
people
we'd be out of work, wouldn't we, Dave?
That's absolutely, you know. And there are some people who just don't want to do it. This is not about forcing people to do it. But the vast majority of people, if you sit down and you say, listen, I just want to do this. I want to interview you. And you might want to say, it's not for me. It's for, you know, your grandkids, your great-grandkids and generations yet to come. And people will do it. And the purpose of these conversations is not to have like a Jerry Springer kind of conversation. It's really just to, you know, just to listen and to honor someone and tell them how much they mean to you by asking them about their lives.
Tomorrow's the National Day of Listening. Our guest is Dave Isay, the founder of the National Day of Listening and of StoryCorps. You're listening to a Thanksgiving special from NPR News. And let's go to Lori. Lori with us from Orlando.
Hi. My question is, are these revelations ever too burdensome for the person listening?
What do you mean by that?
Of course, it's a personal question. I've shielded my children. They're still young. Still will shield them. But at some point, I don't want to place my pain upon them. But there are obviously things that have happened to me that affect me and how I parent, and I don't want a burden. And
it's an interesting question, Dave. You've heard a lot more of these stories than I have. We think of them as catharsis. Is there ever something that doesn't turn out that way?
Well, I'm not a therapist, not a psychologist, psychiatrist. What happens at StoryCorps? We've done 35,000 interviews with about 70,000 people, because most people come in pairs. And every one of those interviews, and this is a tribute to the facilitators, the staff, on the incredible staff of StoryCorps, every one of those interviews from what I understand has gone well. So that has not happened. But remember, I mean, I think that at some point, what these interviews are about is someone asking you, and at some point your children may be of an age where they sit and ask you that question, and that may be the appropriate time to talk about those things that you want to talk about. But again, I'm not a therapist, so you know, this is something you may want to talk to someone who's a professional about.
Well, I do want to thank you, and I can't tell you how much each story I hear touches me, and also your facilitator who screened my call amazingly touched on the point with very few words from me. She immediately picked up on what I was trying to say. So thank you.
Lori, have a
thank
good
you,
holiday.
And have a great holiday. Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's see, we get another caller in. This is Manny. Manny Withers from Hood River in Oregon.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to say StoryCorps is so amazing. I'm a documentary filmmaker, and I think what it's doing for our country is amazing. It's what I do daily, getting stories out of people I don't even know. But most recently, I made a film about my family, and I'm pretty liberal. I live on the West Coast, and my family's really conservative, and it was hard for me to get and talk to them because there was this big political difference. So I didn't even go home for holidays or anything like that. Well, in the course of interviewing my family and finding out who they are in their past, I found out why they're conservative, and it comes from my grandma and grandpa. And my grandpa was in the war. He went AWOL a lot. He didn't want to be there. He would steal Jeeps. He was drunk, you know. got out of the war, became a gang member in Fontana, California in the 40s and 50s, and decided when his brother was, you know, one of his brothers ended up getting shot and going to jail, he decided, like, I got to straighten up my life. And he's telling me this stuff for the first time, like, a month ago. And he's never told me this stuff, how he found my grandma and tried to settle down and had these three sons that he raised very conservatively, and she ended up taking them and moving to Oklahoma and leaving him in California. And he stayed there, the conservative, staunch family man, working to support his family, even though she went and ended up with another man in Oklahoma. And it was just amazing to see, like, oh, this is how it happens. But my grandma, the whole time in Oklahoma, was still raising her sons conservatively, but not living that way. So it made sense to me why I became who I was, because I wanted to cut out the bull crap. You know what I mean?
Well, at least it helped you, certainly, and it helped you understand better who they were and where they're coming from. It's Manny, and you're making a film about your family?
Yeah, it's indirectly. It's about my uncle who he's a garbage man that makes a haunted house. But in doing this film, I found out that the building of the haunted house isn't about the haunted house. It's about the family working out their issues in the dark in the woods wearing masks. It's really interesting.
Well, good luck with the film, Manny. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. And Dave Isay, we just have a few seconds left. If you give some people guidance on how they can get some of those stories out of their family members on the National Day of Listening.
Yeah, so folks should go to our website, to nationaldayoflistening.org. We have a very, very simple instruction manual. There is no barrier to doing this. You know, folks can – many of us have the equipment that we can use to do this. You can use an iPhone, a cell phone. Many cell phones can record your computer. Get eight friends together, go to a local electronics store, spend $80, $10 a piece, share a tape recorder. You'll have a top-notch recording equipment. Everything you need to know is at the National Day of Listening site. All I have to say is don't wait. Do these interviews and spread the word.
Tomorrow
and happy holidays.
And happy holidays to you, Dave Isay, as well. He joined us from the studios of member station WBUR in Boston, and he's, of course, the founder of StoryCorps and the National Day of Listening, which is tomorrow. Tomorrow, it's also Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Ira Flatow will join us with highlights from an award ceremony saluting the strange and silly in science. Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. It's a holiday special from NPR News.